A little further on I spotted a group of people, two female nurses and one male, treating a couple lying on the floor. When I got closer I noticed the couple's clothes were drenched wet, seaweed was wrapped around their feet and stuck to their bodies. The woman of the two just seemed to come around and was being consoled by a nurse holding her hand. I was mystified by the state they were in and the fact that they were wet and covered in seaweed. I asked the male helper whether he could enlighten me what was going on. He smiled and said, "These people had a boating accident. They got caught in a storm, their boat capsized and they drowned, and yes, they are dead, very much so, but they don't know it yet. They think they have been rescued and in a way they have." He proceeded to attend to the man, who just came round as well and immediately inquired where they were and what had happened to their boat. The nurse informed him that the boat unfortunately had been lost but that he and his wife were both safe now. He assured them that they would be taken care of now and be given some dry clothing as well as a hot drink. I looked at the male nurse. "I don't understand, how did they get here and why are they still wet and what is all this about with the seaweed?" "They are here because they cried out for help as they drowned. We went, picked them up and brought them here. Of course, there is no need for their wet clothes or the seaweed on them, in a way this is just for decoration if you like." With that he smiled and I smiled too, noting his sense of pride about the added detail. "You have to understand that as far as they are concerned they have been saved from their fate physically. They are under the impression that they have been pulled aboard by a rescue boat and brought to safety." With a barely concealed grin the man continued, "Sometimes we have to put on a bit of a show to provide continuity from one state to the next. Imagine how confusing it would be if you found yourself one moment fighting for your life and the next moment being on dry land, fit as a fiddle without a drop of water on you as if nothing had happened. That could lead to an awful lot of confusion and a bit of a shock. No, we quickly adjust to a situation and do what is required to give these guys a smooth transition." By now the couple had both got up and were gently led away by the two female staff. The woman was clearly still in a state of shock and crying, while the man was eager to thank them for rescuing them. I knew then that they were in safe hands and probably about to enter a counseling session where they would learn the whole truth about their condition. Other institutions that are frequently flagged up by mediums and channelers are the now famous halls of learning. Are they real? Do they exist? First of all, I personally have not come across any institutions signposted as such, though that doesn't mean they don't exist, but I have come across art colleges and campuses, artist colonies and places where people were involved in ballet and dancing, which I commented on in the book Multidimensional Man. I have also been many times to the higher dimensional aspect of my beloved old art school in Hamburg, where I seemed to spend time producing new work in the company of other students within the large studios. Although I am not always fully awake when visiting, the few times I am I recognize that I work there, evident in the substantial body of work I find during my out-of-body visits. On these occasions I remember having put on exhibitions of my work, surprisingly of a painting style I don't recognize, but nevertheless I identify them clearly as my own work. Earning my living as a digital illustrator, I often feel the need to return to my roots and indulge once again in some oil painting, but, as time won't allow for it, I can clearly see that my desires are given expression on the non-physical reality levels. So in a sense it appears that many of us may be leading a double life, in which our dreams take us into realities that cater for our needs, even while still alive. 2009. Date missing from entry. Meeting an artist. As soon as I drifted off to sleep again I found myself fully awake on a large veranda looking through the open patio doors into an artist's studio. This was not a lucid dream. There was no narrative and I knew I was in an obi. I was clear as well, no need for the extra ritual to achieve extra awareness. Inside, facing away from me, was a man with dark hair. He was painting a picture. As I moved closer he turned around and greeted me with a friendly smile. He had a black mustache and his hair parted in the center. He revealed a painting on an easel in the style of a German abstract expressionist painter. I became aware of other paintings in his studio and the style reminded me of the German expressionist painter Max Pechstein, who had been part of the German art group Die Brücke, but I wasn't 100% sure. For whatever reason, my clairvoyant vision failed to put a name to him and I felt it to be too intrusive to inquire. Instead of asking who he was, I commented on his painting and told him that although I somehow recognized the style, they were nothing I had seen before. The ones he seemed to be working on were no larger than 2 by 3 feet, while others leaning against the wall in the back of his studio, which covered the whole ground floor of his house, were up to 6 feet tall. He told me you cannot stand still and have to move on, and yet, clearly, expressionism had stuck with him, long after his death. Out of curiosity, I asked him if he had met Cézanne over here, and he told me there wasn't an artist from his era he hadn't met. Seeing my admiration for his work, he volunteered to show me some other pieces. While we were talking, I noticed a small group of art lovers had gathered around us. I might as well show you what I am up to right now, as I have got an audience. With that, he took out a kind of remote control and, pointing it at a wall in front of us, he materialized 5 or 6 paintings. I show you these because it is easy to explain what this is all about. He then proceeded to tell us about the secret of color and the real power of good composition, while flashing new and surprisingly real paintings in front of our eyes that were strangely alive and not like projections in any way. The spectacle of conjuring up work out of thin air intrigued me. I knew then that once a painting is created, there is no need for it to remain in visual reality. It can simply be called up like you would call up an image from the hard drive of your computer to the monitor screen, simple. As I mentioned previously, everything is forever imprinted in the universal memory bank. How that is possible and how it works is beyond my comprehension, but this is the miracle of consciousness and we know very little about its actual working as yet. Back to the artist. Not only was I impressed by his work, but, being the kind of tech addict I am, what was of equal interest to me was the technology he wielded with such confidence in order to give us such an extraordinary multimedia performance. It seemed that his wand worked as an amplifier that made it easier to restore his painting to actual tangible reality. I imagine that sometime in the future, when we learn more about the nature of reality, this may well become the way we manifest objects, by assembling physical atoms from a digital memory bank on our physical Earth as well. After this demonstration, I found myself back in the same town I had left earlier. It was very busy and it reminded me of the tourist town of St. Ives my wife and I had visited earlier in the summer, except everything here was on a much larger, grander scale. I have always found that the English seaside town of St. Ives has a somewhat non-physical aspect to it, and when out of body in a non-physical town, this comparison frequently comes to me. But, as in St. Ives, here too were not only tourists, but many artists and studios showing off their craft and wares. Some were of a sophistication and splendor I had never come across. I stood in front of a showroom, which can only be described as a glass boutique. I was particularly taken by some enormous, multicolored glassware, which would be impossible to produce on this earth. The iridescence of the material was alluring and simply, and literally, out of this world. Further along and right across the street, I saw a young artist painting a mural simply by using the gestures of his hands right in front of my eyes. I started chatting to him and asked him how difficult it was and what I would have to do to accomplish a similar feat. "It's all in the mind," he said. "Simply use your hands and direct your thought, feel, imagine and visualize the colors and marks you wish to use." I tried it out on a 6-foot-high whitewashed wall right in front of me and quickly got carried away by the ease and pleasure this created and the riot of color that appeared before me. It seemed that the joy gained amplified the color and the design of the creation. You still have to make decisions about your painting, although perhaps intuitively. Here the process develops and evolves naturally, as if the heart is wielding the brush before your eyes can even register it. I became aware, with a sense of embarrassment, that I had defaced the private wall of somebody's house. I decided to seek out the occupiers, as I didn't have a clue how to erase my handiwork. The door of the house opened as I approached and an attractive young lady appeared in the door. Before I could even fumble for an apology, she already knew and told me with a big smile that I shouldn't even worry about it. Then she asked me inside. She introduced me to another lady, and a young man who was sitting on a couch. Both smiled at me welcomingly. I was touched. Without getting up, the man looked at some moving images that seemed to be somehow projected against the wall, but without a visible projector. The whole wall was covered in moving images and it reminded me of some multimedia content from a traditional computer screen. Seeing my perplexity, he told me that these images were informing them of any event that went on that they might be interested in. They could quickly select anything of any interest, keeping a printout of the event on the wall. There obviously was plenty on offer, because a whole wall was covered with images of all kinds of events from theater shows, concerts and dance events to things I couldn't even imagine what they were. Curious about the technology behind it, I asked him how these systems worked. He told me there was a very elaborate and sophisticated communication network behind all this into which all the events anyone wanted to communicate were fed, and a filter system designed by the tastes of the individual subscriber would highlight anything that could be of any value. I was stunned, as before me was an enhanced version of our internet. I imagined that in a few years from now such a system may well be implemented here on our physical Earth, and by the time this book is out maybe it already is. Out of curiosity I asked him whether they used any form of electricity to communicate this information. He took me outside the house and pointed towards a mast a few hundred feet away. "Come along," he said. "I'll show you." With that we were airborne and drifted towards the top of the mast. I was aware of some kind of energy radiating from the top in all directions. "Stand in front of the stream." I was a little anxious I might experience some form of unpleasant electrocution. He laughed and took the lead. As I reached the top, I instantly became aware of a stream or burst passing through me, evoking a rather pleasant different emotion that I hadn't expected at all and found hard to explain. After this I asked other questions, not all of which I can remember, but one I was keen to know the answer to was whether there was some kind of administration system in place or government. "There is no such thing as government or administration here as you know it in your world," he said. "Everything seems to govern itself. No higher authority is required. Although there are plenty of people who consider themselves to be authorities, but their attempts at assuming some kind of power or authority soon fall flat, simply because there is no power to wield as everything follows the principles of nature." He then showed me an image of somebody at one time trying to assert some form of authority. All he achieved was to annoy people and attract ridicule. He soon disappeared from the scene. Upon waking, I decided next time I was to venture into this world I would prepare myself with a clear task sheet to conduct a proper survey. Since this event a few years ago, our technology has accelerated and we have already seen similar types of wall projection technology in development. There are several types of technologies I have observed over the years, some of which I mentioned in my previous book. Others were not paid much attention to, simply because I didn't know what to make of at the time. It is worth noting everything observed and recording it as accurately as possible, because sooner or later it may pop up on the physical level. The 21st of February 2010, non-physical city life. This was just one of those numerous experiences which took place on a slightly higher dimensional level, which follows the one that is almost a replica of our physical world. This is a level where people are firmly established and have adjusted their whole life and lifestyles to the increasing creative powers of these dimensions. The greatly increased power for creative manifestation has quite a dramatic effect on the dynamics of the lives of the people living here. The inhabitants are living at a higher pace, not driven by industry and the need to work as we do here in our cities, but simply because of the availability of increased powers of creativity and manifestation. In these regions, people feel motivated and at liberty to make almost all their dreams and wishes come true. When I first realized that I was on another dimension beyond my physical body, I was confronted with life in a large city that simply could not have any equivalent on Earth. It was the sheer flamboyant design of the buildings and the generous layout of the streets that demonstrated this. I was amazed by the number of people milling through the busy streets and wondered why this city was so populous. On further inspection, I saw no reason why there shouldn't be busy cities, although there appeared to be no need for an economic infrastructure. People enjoy city life on Earth for cultural, entertainment and social needs, and there is no reason why people should choose to live anywhere else after advancing into new dimensions. In the obvious absence of economic requirements, the space was filled with incredible creativity and the production of all sorts of artistic artifacts, which was expressed in the extraordinary design of the houses and their incredible detail, the numerous malls and stalls along the streets. People were driving along in inventive forms of transport and quite odd-looking, to the point of humorous, flying machines. The atmosphere was busy and yet cheerful, frequently interspersed with an almost childish sense for play. There were street parties and a number of festivities, and everywhere I looked there were things going on, such as street theater or reenactments on a grand scale. I could easily have spent days, perhaps weeks or even months, studying the hectic life and interacting with its people. My attention was drawn towards an attractive young woman. She wore a dress with a flowered pattern. She smiled openly at me and had obviously noticed that I was only a visitor coming from a different place altogether and still attached to a human biological body, unlike all the other people here. I am frequently surprised at being identified as such and still have not worked out or inquired how. She came towards me by floating across a few stalls filled with hundreds of beautifully crafted objects. "Do you like it here?" She smiled at me, waiting for a reaction. I also couldn't help noticing her deep-cut dress and her beautiful breasts being attractively displayed. I felt embarrassed when I looked at them, but she simply laughed out loud as if she was testing me. "You are very pretty," I heard myself saying in my justification for staring at her incredibly shaped body. She came closer to me and I felt a surge of sexual attraction, which I found difficult to disguise. She burst out laughing and took my hand. "You don't have to be ashamed about what you feel. We see things quite differently here." I became aware of an easy intimacy here in stark contrast to our physical ways of social interaction. People seemed to be less inhibited in showing their feelings, probably because feelings here are much harder to disguise. On Earth, we can simply pretend and pull the wool over each other's eyes. Here, people have to own up to their thoughts and emotions. Consequently, they make allowances and are much more open. The girl then pulled me along the large hall, which was like an over-displayed museum, and pointed at all the beautiful objects we passed by. I couldn't decide which held the greater fascination, her beautiful, open and charming disposition or the incredible display of figurines and crafted objects of all kinds we passed. They were fashioned artistically from the most unusual stones, crystals and ebony, and were not just very lifelike, but almost alive. Then, to my utter alarm, I saw the man at the end stall lift up a table and toss the whole display into the air, where it crashed down to the ground, shattering the precious display in a million pieces. He burst out laughing when he saw my expression of horror. Then, with a grandiose, theatrical gesture, he commanded all the pieces to reassemble like in a gigantic magic trick. I found this whole display rather disconcerting and not at all funny. This only seemed to make him enjoy himself even more as he turned to his friend, who was also creased up with laughter. By this time I felt rather overwhelmed with all the activity and craved some quietness. I went outside the hall and noticed that I had lost my female companion. She was nowhere to be seen. The street was crowded and the city appeared vast, and I had no way of knowing of how to get out of it. It was not an unfriendly place, not at all like the inner city of London, which had none of this cheerful, carefree atmosphere. It was just too hectic and too busy for me. I considered focusing on the pretty lady to find out whether she was acting as my guide. Instead, I felt a gentle knocking in my head, something I often noticed when returning to physical awareness, and became simultaneously aware that I was lying in bed, yet still immersed in the pictures of the city. Julia gently woke me and offered me a cup of tea. I smiled at her cheerfully, wondering whether female intuition had been at work to stop my potential infidelity in its tracks. She smiled back at me as if she knew. Later I asked, but she denied having had any extrasensory knowledge. The 2nd of January 2013, everything we imagine is pulled from an existing reality. Sometimes I come across scenarios I simply have not been prepared for, as there is no equivalent on this physical planet of ours. There can't be, because our physical laws of nature won't allow it. Some things are literally beyond this world, and I am always open, even eager, to discover and explore new sceneries, something never seen before, something totally out of this world. Last night I made such a visit, unfortunately cut short when I was gently awoken by the clinking noise of a teaspoon in a freshly brewed mug of tea. It started off as a lucid dream, which only became lucid when I was told that I was the new owner of a two-wheeled Volkswagen Beetle. The strangeness of the vehicle, with only the front half of the 50s VW and the rest open like a chariot, catapulted me into full OB awareness and into a world that was totally out of this world. This was not the result of early morning meditation, but no doubt triggered by heavy REM sleep. Often, when finding myself lucid, I use this state to meditate in order to enter deeper levels of consciousness, but this was too weird and too good to be missed. After parking my two-wheeled VW chariot outside a huge leisure complex, I became instantly drawn into the outlandish leisure activities of people who could only be described as a bunch of the most extrovert holidaymakers I had ever come across. The first thing I noticed was when I was hit by a table tennis-sized ball in the face. I spotted a man 100 yards away telling me, via a second ball in my face, that I should get out of the way as I was in the flight path of their strange game, where the player threw several balls simultaneously, destined to hit other balls to be displaced towards various destinations on the playing field. Jumping to safety, I looked around and saw the most amazing architectural complex imaginable surrounding me. The best way I can describe it is a series of elaborate chrome domes, futuristic looking but clearly inspired by 1950s automotive design, hugely extravagant and testosterone driven, distinctly male. This was an astral vocational playground, frequented by attractive people and couples hell-bent on having fun. It was a style-conscious Las Vegas, but without the imitations. With my jaw dropping in amazement at this bewildering anarchy of designs, I tried to construct a plan of how best to gather all the data of such ludicrous abundance of information in order to fashion a comprehensive picture of this strange world I had been plunged into. In the end, I was left with impressions I knew would take years to put into some form of context, so I just drifted through the crowds, hoping that my non-physical brain would have the secret power to store what I was witnessing for later retrieval. Fortunately, or unfortunately, a return to physical waking reality solved the problem. I still have a clear impression in my mind of some of the architecture I have seen, and as an illustrator it would not be too hard to reproduce it for documentation. What is much harder to document is the general atmosphere and some of the extraordinary detail, the gravity-defying constructions. If I were to illustrate some of these scenes, people no doubt might simply accuse me of making it up on the grounds that I have illustrated science fiction book covers in my past. Having said that, I often wonder where some of my colleagues get their inspiration from. I could easily pick on illustrations and sceneries from modern films and categorically state that the images were simply inspired by actual non-physical realities, indirectly or unconsciously copied from astral environments. As an artist, I know where our minds can take us when we let go of our physical focus. I have seen my colleagues unknowingly dipping into the storehouse of the great unconscious. We are equally resourcing as well as creating. Take our physical body out of the equation and what we are left with are the creations, as real and as solid as our focus of attention will allow. Everything is real and as hard as here in the physical reality, though not everything is relevant to our focus of awareness or the life we live at the moment. On higher energy dimensions, which are not dulled down by the negativity that inhibits free flow of creativity, anything we can imagine is tangible reality. All our own creations are, especially so the moment they become mass media information. Take any science fiction or fantasy movie set, and via the attention of the masses it will be cemented into consensus environments, which will endure even when attention is withdrawn. Attention manifests these thought forms on a higher non-physical dimension, where they become tangible reality. If you walk into these sceneries during an out-of-body journey, you will find they are real, and as you focus your attention and touch the objects you will add more detail as you go. Mysteries of the Afterlife, the 8th of October 2012, The Art of Manifestation. I don't often go out of my way to see Kobe's and my first priority is simply to practice my meditation. As a result there can be months without my recording any worthy events. Anybody who has experienced samadhi, and there are different kinds, will know that nothing on earth compares with this sublime state of consciousness, where the ego no longer claims a position and instead a total synchronicity with a deep state of pure being has taken its place. The easiest way to get a picture of this state of consciousness is by remembering how we felt when we were completely absorbed in a task which drew all attention away from ourself and into the moment of the experience. Nearly everybody has felt it, playing an instrument, painting, pursuing a hobby or sport, when we feel in the zone. Samadhi is already a natural potential and aspect of our being state. In the much higher state of absorption, where there is no longer any interest focus to dissolve in, except being or awareness itself, all needs and desires, even in their most sublime and elevated forms, have ceased completely. This pure attribute-free state of awareness offers little incentive to fill this void because nothing is missing. When residing in this state, there is little incentive to stop and re-enter the world of the senses. Once experienced, it is easy to understand that some Eastern meditators feel inclined to remain there for hours at a time, several days, months or even years. By comparison, obis offer very little to compete with, but of course they are of a different order and nature completely. The fact is I feel always more drawn to deep meditation than spending the equivalent amount of time pursuing anything else. However, consciousness is complex and beautiful and learning its mysteries and exploring its infinite vistas is not without its powerful attractions. On this occasion, after weeks of not showing the slightest interest in obis and completely out of the blue, I spontaneously became aware in my dream. When this happens I pay attention, because invariably consciousness is showing me something deemed important. Inevitably new parts of our unfathomable jigsaw will be revealed this way. I focused immediately on my hands. The surroundings were very dark and not very clear at all, so I called out for clarity now, which I don't use very often. Immediately my surrounding came into focus. I proceeded to intensify my awareness by focusing on my hands until full waking consciousness was established. I was inside a village on the village green. 50 yards away was an open gate to an estate. A dog came bounding up to me as if I was its owner, very friendly, and I stroked him. He then jumped ahead of me and I followed him through the half-open wrought iron gate. The dog stopped by a man who was his real owner, who patted his head and then welcomed me. We shook hands as he pointed out that he could see I was not a resident. I was then invited to say hello to his friends. We walked towards a country house, which was much smaller than the big gate we had walked through would have led me to believe. After entering the front door, I followed him upstairs into a lounge. There were three women, one was sitting on a sofa and two were in armchairs around a small table. They were very friendly and soon engaged me in a conversation. It's not too often that we meet conscious travelers, one woman with curly blonde hair said as she offered me a seat.